There have been dramatic developments in American politics since the attempted assassination of former U.S. President Donald Trump. We speak to retired Colonel Chris Wyatt, the former director of African Studies at the U.S. Army War College. Welcome, Colonel.
Well, Chris, thanks for having me back. It's my pleasure. Thank you. I'd have to say we have to go back a little bit further than the attempted assassination. The dramatic events started with the out-of-characteristic early debate, so-called debate, that really induced narcolepsy in me that occurred at the beginning of July.
Well, quite. What do you want to say about that debate before we move on to the attempted assassination?
Sure. The thing about debate is it was highly unusual, not unprecedented, but highly unusual. And the fact that normally a debate is between nominating candidates. Well, Joe Biden, although he secured the delegates, has not become the nominee. And as we see now, he's not the nominee. What normally happens is both parties hold their convention. The delegates that are pledged to those who won the primaries and the caucuses around the country then vote for the candidate, and that's your nominee. Then that person winds up on the ballot for each of the states and the territories. And then after the conventions is when the debates happen, typically in August and September, usually September, maybe October. Having a debate in early July was quite a shocking development, to say the least. And for me, the timing was poor because I was returning from my trip to South Africa. I was pretty tired. I was, 6 hours ahead on South Africa time. It was already tomorrow there when I was here. I actually fell asleep watching the debate in the first 5 minutes. It was that sleep-inducing. But I did wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning because now it's 8 o'clock South Africa time. I woke up at 2 o'clock in the morning and I started watching the debate, because it was still on, it was replaying. And I was not impressed by either candidate. Although I vote for Trump and I voted for him, I was not impressed by his performance, thought he was off his game. But Biden was disastrous, and that was unprecedented. His horrible performance wasn't simply stumbling up the stairs. It wasn't simply having gaffes or misspeaking or getting people's names wrong or asking paraplegics to stand when, didn't even know who they were, that sort of thing. It was a full-on 2 hours of complete cognitive issues, and the whole world could see it. You couldn't hide it anymore. I mean, all of us have known this. He never should have been president. This is a serious concern. But now it was on display for everyone. And what happened after that is why Biden left. And that's why I needed to mention the debate. In the days after that, he began losing major supporters, big money guys who stopped giving money in the tech industry, on Wall Street, the banks, which is where the Democrats get their money from, lots of it. And they just dried up, the taps dried up, the money wasn't coming in. And on top of that disastrous debate performance, then the attempted assassination of President Trump, and Trump became the best thing he could possibly be. He became a martyr who survived. And so Trump's numbers were surging. Jews were abandoning the Democrats. They tend to vote 80-90% for Democrats. That number's changed. Black men who've voted over 90% for Democrats for the past 50 years changed. That number has surged for Trump. Hispanics were already in the tank for Trump. He's up over half, almost 60% of Hispanics. And that's a demographic that had been going for Democrats for 40 years. So the concern was there. The polls were trending very badly. So all of this plays into one thing, plays into the other. And quite frankly, I'm surprised it took them as long as it did. 18 months ago, I predicted he would not be the candidate. What I said is sort of what's happening now. I said that there would be a brokered convention, which the Democrats toss him aside and unbind their delegates because he's not capable of serving. And what they've done is they've run through 18 months and defrauded the American people, and 14.5 million Democrats who voted because they wanted Joe Biden to be president no longer have a voice. Now the elites in the party are making the decision. So he had the disastrous debate, the donors disappeared, the pressure mounted, and then, he steps aside. We haven't seen this since 1968 with Lyndon Baines Johnson, who didn't enter the race, but at least had the decency to go into the Oval Office and do a nationwide address to the American people to explain why he didn't do it. We had to wait for days and days after Joe Biden withdrew from the race before we actually saw that he was even alive. People, all these conspiracy theories running around, is even alive. Who signed the letter? The signature doesn't look like him, and all these other conspiracy theories out there, when simply all he had to do was step forward if he's a real leader and tell the people he's stepping down. It was really embarrassing to watch what's happened. I've never in my life been embarrassed to be an American, but the past few years, it's really difficult not to be embarrassed.
Well, let's go back to the day of the assassination. I spoke to you shortly after that the next morning, and you were highly critical of Secret Service conduct that day. Now, the chief of the Secret Service, Kim Tittle, has resigned.
Well, listen, Chris, I was highly critical of the Secret Service in the immediate. I broadcast just an hour or two after the assassination attempt, and I was critical of many of the things that all these analysts are talking about now. I got most of those things correct in the failure of the Secret Service. Now, I was critical then. I'm even more critical today. This is abysmal. Either this is the largest total cock-up in the history of the Secret Service, or it was negligence, or it was malfeasance. It's one of those things. Kimberly Cheadle finally resigned as director of the Secret Service, but that's not the end of it. She should be charged criminally for negligence, dereliction of duty, and also for perjury before Congress. She clearly lied to Congress. She told us they had no video footage of any of the agents or any of the activity that took place that day. That was a bold-faced lie. Yesterday, courtesy of Senator Chuck Grassley, a video was released from the body cam of one of the snipers on the roof after the shooting, in which we see the rifle of the shooter, the assailant. We see the assailant's body lying there. We see a Secret Service agent clearly discussing what's going on. The sniper's up on the roof, dressed in camouflage, body armor, Kevlar with body cams. And in addition to that, we also see another local law enforcement official towards the end of the roof. And they're discussing 1 hour after the shots airing out at 6:10 or 6:11. This is at 7:10. They're discussing what was happening. And to the credit of those people on that roof, the law enforcement officials on that roof, in my view, they were calm, they were under control in a crazy situation, trying to make sense of what was going on. So I'm not criticizing their actions. In fact, the Secret Service agent says, so you saw this, and they said, no, we didn't see that. We weren't on the roof. We can't confirm that. And then to talking about people who are being detained, who are trying to warn law enforcement that someone's on the roof. And they said, yeah, we have to detain them. And that's the correct procedure. You don't know who these people are. They could have been involved. So you have to detain them, interrogate them, and find out what's going on. So the conduct of those agents was great. But we were told unequivocally by Kim Cheadle that there was no such footage. She lied. This woman is part of a cover-up. Now, I'm not saying that the government tried to kill Trump, but there's a clear cover-up to cover the backside of an incompetent or malfeasant or negligent Secret Service. And it's going at all levels, Department of Homeland Security. And there's more to it. It's not just that. That video came out. We also saw that the representative from Tennessee went there and found out from local law enforcement officials that they were excluded from the Secret Service's operations center. Now, how is that even possible? Any military veteran or law enforcement veteran who's listening to this will know that every time you engage with other actors, in this case, other law enforcement, you have liaison officers who are embedded with you. In the U.S. military, we send liaison officers to all foreign partners and even our own units. So if you're in a brigade and the brigade adjacent to you is on the battlefield, you send an officer over and you coordinate and they have direct communication. They sit in the operations center on both sides to ensure that people know what's going on so you don't get each other killed at a minimum. And also make sure you do your job effectively and that your seams where you link the gaps where the coverage go from one organization to another is linked so that there's no seam where people can get through there. It's a pretty simple concept. The fact that local law enforcement was excluded, and this isn't hyperbole, this isn't speculation, it's a statement of fact by witnesses who gave legally binding testimony that they were excluded from there. Why did that happen? That's incompetence at best. You know, it's and then it just goes on and on. What's been happening here is just the conduct of the Secret Service is atrocious. They only have 36 people, principals that they're responsible for protecting, including former President Carter, who's in a hospice. That's all. Now, that's a big task because people go all over the world and they've got lots going on and details have to split and go to, but they have $3 billion a year, 60 billion rand to pull that off. Now, she didn't even mention the other, unless they've taken the mission away, the other purpose of Secret Service is to do counterfeiting. To stop counterfeit bills. I worked with Secret Service overseas in that mission. But it's my criticism may have been harsh that day, Chris, but I've upped it quite a degree because I cannot believe this. This is heads must roll. And not just Kim Cheadle, and I think criminal charges are warranted in her case, but beyond that, the agents of the day, the special agent in charge, other people are responsible for this. This you can't have this. I don't care if you hate Trump. You cannot have a former president assassinated because of the incompetence of the people responsible for protecting him. Quite frankly, if I were Donald Trump, I'd be calling Eric Prince or G4S right now. It's a real protection.
Well, meanwhile, Joe Biden's deputy, Kamala Harris, seemed to have tied up the nomination very quickly, Chris. What do you think of that? Can she even beat Trump?
Well, there's a... This is what's disturbing about politics, whether it's in South Africa, it's in Germany, UK, or here, is that, and I'm sorry, but this is a fact, that people are paying attention to know that the media have an outsized influence on people. People are easily influenced by what they see, what they hear without knowing the facts. And so right now, anyone who criticizes Kamala Harris is being called a misogynist or a racist. That's already started in the media. Also saw New York Times and Washington Post articles running around meeting with Black Americans, how now that Kamala's in the race, they have renewed, you know, well, they're not sure about her policies, but, you know, they're going to vote for it. Why? Because identity politics? Basically, that's what it comes down to. And some of these people interviewed, well, my big concern is white Americans. You know, there's basically implying that white Americans are racist. They won't vote for her. But a funny little thing. She had a rally as soon as she went out. 3,000 people showed up. Of course, Trump gets 50,000, you know, but she gets 3,000 people to show up. 99.9% of the faces were white. There's only a couple Black folks in the crowd. So these white racists, where are they at? Apparently, white people have no problem voting for her. But here's the thing. This woman could not get 2% of Democratic Party voters to support her for her election bid in 2020. And we're supposed to believe she's so popular now after being the border czar and failing at every task she's had. And you already see the spin today. All over media in the U.S., the cable networks, the legacy media, they're already spinning. Well, Republicans are calling her the border czar. That's not true. She was never the border czar. But then you just put right next to that the clips of MSNBC, ABC News, CBS, all of them going, President Biden appointed Kamala Harris as the border czar today and showing him appointing her. And then all of the media calling her the border czar for 3 years. And now that they want to wash their hands of the criminal negligence that's happened at her southern border, it's like she never did it. This spin has an effect, and it does affect voters. So it's hard to predict what's going on. And I'm not at all surprised what's happening inside the Democratic Party. This is the same party that defrauded Bernie Sanders, the leftist socialist, who's ostensibly an independent from Vermont, but he's actually a Democrat. He caucuses with them, and he was a lifelong Democrat, a man who celebrated his wedding in Moscow during the Soviet Union, by the way, Bernie Sanders. But Bernie Sanders was defrauded in the 2016 election because the superdelegates all gave all their votes to Hillary Clinton and overwhelmed the number of votes he had. So this is the same party that doesn't believe in true democracy or even representative democracy. You are supposed to vote for delegates. The delegates are bound to you at the convention. But that's not what happens to the Democrats. They do what they want. And what they've done here is they've run a fake election for the past 18 months to defraud the American people when they knew full well that Joe Biden did not have the mental acuity or the health to be serving as president for another 4 years. He didn't have it for this 4 years. So he never should have been there. He should have left the race a year ago. And the media is spinning all this for Kamala Harris. You know, yeah, she was by his side. Yeah, covering up the fact that he wasn't capable of doing the job. She's complicit in that. And look, this may come across a lot of people as like pro-Trump. It's not pro-Trump. I'm pro-truth. And the truth of the matter, which I've been reporting on for years, is that this man was not fit for office. And we could see it in his actions. At last night's presentation, he finally spoke to the country in an Oval Office appearance. Last night's appearance was atrocious. I mean, he's living in a fantasy world. I'm the only president of the century who didn't start wars. Really? You heard of the Ukraine? You're not involved in that? You never heard of Gaza? What about Niger, Mali, Burkina Faso, Sudan, Myanmar? All this happened on your watch, and most of it through your negligence, things that could have been avoided or mitigated. Nope. This guy is just really, anyway, it's Kamala Harris. I'm not surprised that this happened. To me, it was all in the fix. Now, here's a little conspiracy theory for you, Chris. You want to hear a conspiracy theory?
Why not?
Okay, let's have a little fun with this. I'm not making a claim, but wouldn't it be interesting if the elites that control the Democratic Party in business, Wall Street, and the politicians, former politicians who are all tied closely, wouldn't it be interesting if they kind of goaded Joe into having a July debate rather than waiting till September, knowing that he wouldn't make it to the convention or that his health was declining so rapidly? And Joe has an ego that's the size of the Rio Grande, just like Donald Trump. They both have massive egos. And Joe is also easily bullied into things when you just kind of call him a wimp or tell him he's not strong enough, especially when it comes to someone like Trump. So it would have been easy to say, Joe, listen, you know, you got to do a debate now, man. Your numbers are failing. You can take it to Trump. You can do it. Wouldn't it be interesting if the whole purpose of that debate was so the world would see that he's not capable, so there would be a convenient excuse to remove him? But then Joe doubled down after debate. Instead of being, you know, humble and going, oh, I'm not up to this. No, I'm in the race to the end. It didn't work. And then assassination attempt on Trump. Trump survives that, and he's more popular than ever. Now there's a real problem. I'm not saying that he was sent to the debate for that purpose, but wouldn't that be an interesting outcome if that were the case? But what are the cases? Yes, Kamala Harris is likely to get the nomination, but that's not a sure thing. Joe Manchin has talked about filing. I don't know if he can get the support, but he's a centrist Democrat who's been trending independent of late. It's a crazy world. It's all upside down. But at the end of the day, I think, you know, Francis Hayek had it correct. We're all on the road to serfdom.
Sounds like a great idea. Who could have beaten Trump?
Well, who out there can beat Trump? I don't think Kamala Harris can beat him in a fair election. What I mean a fair election is not free advertising by the media. To be fair, Donald Trump got at least $1 billion of free advertising in 2015, 2016, because the media were in love with him until he became, then they realized he's going to become president. They didn't love him anymore, but he got free, and that wasn't fair to the other candidates. And it won't be fair because she's already getting that free press. I don't think in a free and fair election, she can beat him. Her record is abysmal. And everything she's done as vice president, as a senator, I mean, she sponsored insurrectionists getting out of jail, paying their bail, raising bail for them. She imprisoned black men for minor drug offenses in California and gleefully crowed about it, which kind of torques off black men. There's so many things. Her time in San Francisco as a prosecutor, she went after a almost five century old nonprofit Catholic organization that helped the poor to destroy them because of business. I wanted to get involved in that and make money off of it. She destroyed a centuries old charity, and the Catholics are still upset about that, and they have a right to be upset about that. I mean, that charity predated, you know, Mexico as a country. It was when Spain was a colonial power. It was around. So it's, you know, she's not a winnable candidate. We saw that Democratic primaries. But of course, the spin comes in. When she couldn't win in the Democratic primary and she left the race, the media, almost to man and woman here in the U.S., said, well, it's because Americans are racist. They won't vote for a black woman. And then they codified it, said, not just Americans, they said, yeah, the Republicans, you know, they wouldn't vote for her. Hello, they're closed primaries. Republicans don't vote in Democratic primaries or caucuses. So Republicans aren't responsible for her not being your candidate. You're responsible. They just spin everything. Beyond that, Newsom is frequently mentioned. He's been campaigning for 18 months. It was odd of Gavin Newsom to take on Ron DeSantis of Florida when neither one of them were the candidate, but both were obviously looking to become candidates. So they thought they'd rise above Trump and Biden. And they would be the guys. And so Newsom would attack Florida and DeSantis would comment back about Florida. Newsom went to Florida. Why is he going to Florida unless he's on vacation? He's going there for politics. You're the governor of California, not Florida. So Newsom is a name that's mentioned out there. Beyond that, you've got Gretchen Whitmer of Michigan, who's claimed she won't be in the race. But we know politicians. They'll tell you whatever they think you want to hear today, and they'll change your mind tomorrow. So she could come back. And then there's also talk of Josh Shapiro, the governor of Pennsylvania, where I live at. But this candidate is not likable and has a lot of negatives. So I'm not sure who's out there. Of course, in the background, there's always, well, Michelle Obama or Oprah Winfrey. I don't know. It's at the convention, I don't think that's going to happen. But listen, I wasn't going to watch the Democratic National Convention because it's become unwatchable, unbearable. The last one I watched in full was in 2004. For when they introduced Barack Obama at that convention. That was an interesting one. It was still a legitimate one. Since then, they've just become shows, and I haven't watched them. But I'll tell you what, I'll be watching the Democratic convention this year.
Well, meanwhile, Trump has picked J.D. Vance, the author of Hillbilly Elegy, a book I read, as his running mate. What do you think of that pick?
Well, Republicans, they're not going to like me. Conservatives may not like me either, but I don't trust J.D. Vance. I'm not a fan. Hillbilly Elegy is a disrespectful, rude misrepresentation of Appalachians. Coming from Appalachia, I took great offense to the book. And the reason it was so popular is because leftists in our book industry, in our media, promoted the book and made it, and wrote positive, raving reviews about it when it came out. It's not a bad book. I mean, but it's not entirely honest book. And I had a problem with that. And so he became famous because the left liked him, just like Trump was famous. He was the darling of the left until he ran for office. And now that J.D. Vance has become a threat to them, now Hillbilly Elegy is being reconsidered and rewritten, and the book reviews and how it's a terrible thing. My position has been firm all along. I'm not convinced about J.D. Vance. And I think Donald Trump is making a mistake that he frequently makes. Out of loyalty or out of whatever misguided ideas he has, he brings people who are not loyal to his inner circle, and then they betray him. We saw that with Jeff Sessions. We saw that with Burr. We saw that with his chief of staff in the White House. The list goes on and on. I'm not convinced J.D. Vance is the person that they say he is. He's, to me, he was disloyal. He called Trump all kinds of horrible names, called him a Hitler just a couple years ago. Now suddenly he's in bed with Trump. I'm not convinced. He's, you know, I'm not from Missouri, but there's a phrase out there, you know, Missouri State is a show me state. You're going to have to show me. J.D. Vance has convinced me that he's who he says he is. My concern is that Trump wins, Vance is in there. It sets the stage for 8 years of Vance. And at the moment, I'm not at all enamored with that. I have much better picks than J.D. Vance.
Well, with the way things are going for Trump, it's not unlikely that there could be another attempt on his life, don't you think, Chris?
I'm very concerned about not just Trump. I'm concerned about Kamala Harris's life. I don't trust the Secret Service protecting Kamala Harris or Joe Biden or Jimmy Carter, for that matter. These people have shown they're incompetent. And I don't want to hear, well, they're brave and courageous. Yeah, that doesn't cut the mustard. We're brave and courageous in the military, too. But when we fail to get the job done, we're held accountable. They need to be held accountable, the people responsible for this, before you get any trust. And I'm very concerned, not just about Trump, but now they're also interfering in the election, telling Trump he shouldn't do outdoor rallies. Why? So he can't get a big crowd? Do your job and it won't be a threat. It wasn't a threat for years, successful until recently.
Thank you. That was retired Colonel Chris Wyatt speaking to BizNews about the latest developments in American politics. Thank you, Colonel. I'm Chris Stain.